This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2022, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders Educational Programs on March 24 and 25, 2022, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Annalisa, for opening for me. And I hope you brought your caffeinated drink with you. It's that time of afternoon. Sleepy time, at least for me. Have you ever wondered what a church with only men in it would look like? I think of potlucks with lots of rib and steak, no salads, maybe a few desserts. I also think of the kids after church, climbing benches, running around the pulpit area. While the men exchange hunting stories if they hunt. Of course, a church with only women in it would be problematic as well. Probably way too many tears, too many stories about pregnancies, maybe too much hand-holding during prayer time. Both of these pictures are problematic, aren't they? Perhaps, though, sometimes we as women view the work of the church as primarily men's work. The men run the meetings, set the agendas, preach the sermons. And do we ever sort of have this mentality like we make the food? But Jesus could never have imagined a church without women. Jesus interacted with women often. They were present and very essential to his story. I think of what the story of Lazarus would be like without Mary and Martha. I think of the woman that washed Jesus' feet and lavishly poured that expensive perfume on him, giving the nearby disciples a lesson in Jesus' value. I think of the Gentile woman begging for healing for her child, and responding with such quick intelligence and tenacity to Jesus's question of why I shouldn't give the dogs food from the children's table. And Jesus commends her for her faith and heals her child. And it wasn't only Jesus. It was also Paul. Paul could not imagine a church without women as well. And we see that in Romans chapter 16, where he's greeting people in the Roman church. And 7 or 8 out of those 26 people mentioned are women. And this is in a very patriarchal society. In fact, the person who carried the letter to the Roman church was probably a woman named Phoebe. And Paul called her his benefactor. The other women mentioned were Mary, Tryphena, Tryphesa, Persia, and Priscilla, and these were women that Paul mentioned were useful and labored much. And I like that he also mentions Rufus's mom, and he's noticing Rufus's mom, and he basically says, I call her mom as well. As I thought about Paul's letter, I wondered, if Paul wrote to my church, would there be women he'd mention? Who would they be, and why would he pick them out? Women are half the church. Historically, we have been more than half. Do we stop and consider the influence that we have on the body? And before we go further, just a brief note here. This is not a talk about gender roles. The churches we attend have different views of women's roles in the church, and regardless of the specific role you play in your church, there are you can bring your giftings and influence to bear. For example, if women don't teach Sunday school at your church, there's still other ways that you can mentor younger women. It's not the only way. And just briefly mention as well, my goal is to encourage us to love and serve the church. I'm not breaking new ground today, but simply giving us a chance to pause and consider how we're doing with this. So what does it mean to be a woman who influences the church? Now, I'd like to make three observations. First, influence is not a choice. Everybody has influence. Influence is defined as the capacity to have an effect on the development or behavior of someone, and there's no way to opt out of it. The moment you start crying after birth and your parents respond to you, that's a type of influence that we have. The question is not whether you will have influence. The question is, will your influence be for the good or for the bad? And sometimes we feel like opting out of influence, of having influence. You hear people make comments like, I don't have to explain my actions, or it's my decision. Can't I just do what's best for me here? The answer is no, not without weighing the cost to others. And what seems best for us isn't always best for the body. None of us can escape the fact that what we believe, do, say, post on Facebook or Instagram can tear down or build up the church. In fact, my simple presence or absence at a church service influences. I was talking to some of my family and asking them about women that they grew up with in the church, and I found two stories. The first one comes from one of my brother-in-laws, and he remembers the church he grew up in as very much a man's world. But he says he remembers this one pastor's wife, and he called her a sniveling woman. And I like that word. and he says, she would talk to his mom and say, well, they said so-and-so. And I guess it was kind of a nitpicky sort of type of information she was giving. There was an influential woman. In contrast, another story they gave me was from one of my sister-in-laws, and she said that one of the women in her church, she's now in her 90s, and she has just been this faithful presence in their church, and she's the one that would always wash up, until more recent years, wash up the silverware after the fellowship meal, just very positive. And this isn't a church that has had quite a bit of struggle. I think she had a lot of influence as well. The second observation I would like to make is I will be held accountable for my influence. One of the things, maybe this is just me, but one of the things I've struggled with picturing is that I'm going to stand before the Lord without my husband, without my children, without my parents or any other family members or friends. It will be me and the Lord. And how my family members loved or didn't love the church is not going to affect my love, how God views my love for the church on that day. I will also be held accountable because in God's eyes, there's neither male nor female, Greek nor Jew in his body and in his call to work. It's like a marriage. My husband's name is Patrick, and Patrick is not more married than me just because God has given him the role of leadership in our marriage. No, I'm just as married as him. It's just that I have a different role to play. In reality, the congregation is incomplete without the giftings of women, and we will be held accountable for our influence. One picture I like that the Bible gives us is of the building that's being built, and we all know those verses. But women are some of the essential blocks in that building that's being built. It's the names on the blocks aren't just going to be Patrick and Stephen and Mark. They're also going to be Bethany and Sarah and Ashley. Third, while our influence should make us walk carefully, it should also really excite us. Women have a unique opportunity for influencing the church. My husband is currently working on a writing project right now about the early church, and he told me how women in the early church played this really important role in bringing converts into the church, because a lot of these women worked in other homes. They would go in as laundresses or clean the house, that type of thing. And they took the gospel with them. And it was really a tool of evangelism in that time that brought people to the Lord. And so I want you to stop and think, if your role right now is for you to work outside the home in some way, understand that there's huge opportunity as you go out into your communities. I also think that Anabaptist married women have a unique opportunity. We normally don't have day jobs and more flexible time because of our emphasis on our homes. And we can do many things that men with their schedules can't do. And the opportunities just abound, and we could probably sit and have a big discussion on this, but there's visiting your elderly neighbors, taking them to doctor's appointments, helping young moms in the church with freezer meals or babysitting. What about a struggling teen in your church or in your community that maybe needs you to spend time with them, inviting them into your home? I know my sister-in-law did this with a teen at her church. She actually hired her to help clean because she knew that she needed stronger women in her life. And it was a way she invested in her. There's also volunteering in our local communities, which once again, we can make a big long list, but there's things like Meals on Wheels, which take meals to elderly people in your community. There's hospice work, there's food banks, on and on. I think we should bring glory to God through our good works in our communities, whether that's through relationships with our neighbors or in a more institutionalized way of volunteering. But as Anabaptist women, we look different than people. And I think it breaks down barriers when we serve and invest in our communities and we seem more approachable in that way. And I think that's important for us to remember. Another way women bring something different than men is in that we are nurturers. And we nurture children, even if they're not our own. Our culture has many children in them and many ways to invest. One thing I thought about is I remember the first time I taught preschool Sunday school class, and this was before I had children. And I grew up in a church that didn't have Sunday school, and so this was, I didn't know how it felt to be a four-year-old in a Sunday school class. But as I taught these kids, I felt like I was babysitting. Read them stories, and they'd scribble in their books. And then I had four-year-olds that went to preschool Sunday school class, and they come home, and they tell you stuff, and you're like, whoa, these kids are learning things. And I just want to say, it's not an insignificant thing to teach four-year-olds the Bible. And we're also the main nurturers of women. We nurture women in our church, and we have the unique opportunity to minister and evangelize at least half of the world that we understand better than men. Okay, I hope as I was talking about influence that maybe some names came to your mind of women that you know of that have influenced the church, churches you've been a part of. And I want to just, I have a list. I think of some of the people that came to my mind. I think of Miss Jane, who warmly welcomes the visitor and the stranger at our church. I think of two younger women, Kristen and Jacinda, that organize and help with a local food bank. I think of Darlene, the faithful, godly teacher in our school for many, many years. And I could keep on listing. But I would like you to just think briefly about a woman that you know has invested in your congregation. And then I would like you to turn around and find somebody, hopefully that you don't know, and just briefly share those stories with each other for just a bit. Go ahead and turn and tell.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. That excited me to hear all those stories, and I wish I could hear each one of them individually, but to hear you telling those stories. I wish we could share them all. That's too bad. Okay, I'd like to explore three ways that we can influence the church. This is not an exhaustive list by any means. But first, we influence a lot with our words. The lady described in Proverbs 31 used her tongue in two ways. And first, she opened her mouth with wisdom. And one way we show wisdom is actually to restrain our tongue. How easy do we find it to talk about our church in a negative way or our leadership with family and friends? I've thought that everybody should be in leadership at some point to understand the impact of your words on making leading a joy or a burden. That little angry or barbed text message sent can add immense stress to a person trying to lead well. I once heard a lady talk about a time she and her husband were going through a time that they were being pretty critical of the church, and so they were talking a lot and hashing things over. And at one point, her husband looked at her and said, "What would our marriage be like if we treated it the way we treat the church with our words?" That stuck with me. Another story, someone close to me was going through a very messy church situation, and he commented how people sat around and talked and talked and conjectured and supposed, and at some point, what they talked about became reality in their minds. And how can you shake that reality? And I'm sure you have stories of how words can hurt a church. Another way we show wisdom is to actually open our mouth to teach. And I want to use Sunday school class as an example for this. It's a great way to open our mouth with wisdom. I love Sunday school class, but I think there's three types of women that go to Sunday school. And it's the one who talks too much, and I'll raise my hand there. Those who talk about once a year, and those of you who get it about right. I'm sure most of you get it about right. But for myself, I need to restrain myself sometimes. They don't always need my opinions. But if you are one of those people that very seldom talk, especially if you're an older woman, I just want to gently urge you that your sisters need your words. They need your wisdom and input. And go ahead and push yourself, even if it's a little uncomfortable, to add maybe one time a Sunday. That's not over-talking. We need your words. While I said, especially if you're older, I just want to also say, don't justify your lack of participating because you're younger as well. There's always someone younger than you in the class. If you are the youngest, maybe you can give you a year off. But not participating has influence. People may justify their own lack of participating because they see you not contributing. Proverbs 31 also, she opened her mouth with wisdom, but it also says that on her tongue was the law of kindness. And somebody has said, and it's become a favorite quote of mine, that you will never regret being kind. And I'm going to repeat it because I'd like you to write it down if you would. You will never regret being kind. A kind word can soften a heart, open it up for the potential to be shaped. And kindness is more than just words. I want to tell you a story about a man that came to our church for a while. His name was Dr. Joseph, And he was a professor at a nearby college. He had moved into the area to teach. Joseph was Jewish, and he had a vast knowledge of the Bible, but he was pretty eccentric. He dressed uniquely, and he wasn't the easiest person to have a conversation with. He was kind of socially awkward, very opinionated. But about around a year or so after he started attending, he came to know the Lord. And in his long testimony to the church, he mentioned as significant all the Sunday lunches he had in the homes, in the congregation. And that was a change of perspective for me. That was a change of perspective about being hostess to me. I don't love being hostess. It's not my favorite thing to do. But what a powerful tool. What a kind act to have someone into your home, have a meal together, and speak words of life to them through that afternoon. I think that kindness is one of the most influential, powerful and influential ways you can affect the church. And I'm going to have you right now in that little box that's below this section. I want you to think, I didn't nearly cover all the ways our words can affect the church, but I want you to think about one way you want to purpose to use your words to build the church this year. And it might be something that I didn't mention at all, but if you just take a moment and write that down, please. Thank you. We also influence with our actions. Christ is building the church, and it must be a priority for us as half of the body. Most of us don't need more guilt about what we can or can't do. And so I'm not talking necessarily about more activity for the church. Maybe more a reorientation of our thinking. We need a vision of how God can use our families or our singleness, if we're single, to bless and grow the church. And our personal worlds should prioritize the church, even if God's called you to raise a family or if you're working full time. We need to pray about the opportunities that God wants you to take. There's so many opportunities, and we're one part of the body. We're not meant to do it all. And there's many different ways to love the church. I was trying to recollect this, and so this is the best of my recollection, but there's been times in church life that I've been lonely or, felt like I needed a friend. And I had smaller children, and I was going through a time where I was lonely, and I had prayed about it. And God brought, I was praying maybe more for peer relationship, that type of thing, but God brought an older widow lady that lived close to me into my life. And we were back and forth and in each other's homes. And it was just a tremendous blessing to both of us. And as you pray about those opportunities, it might be unexpected the way the Lord answers them. And we don't have to go around looking for projects to minister to. These are mutually beneficial things that can happen in the body if we pray about the opportunities we take. Bring your giftings to the church. They matter to the health of the body. And all of us are made uniquely. We bring something special to our congregations. I think it's actually helpful to think about what do women actually bring? What do we do for the church? And so I want us to just have a time here of calling out ways that women in your church, or maybe you see women in other churches contributing to the body or building it up. And so just to get us started, women work at sewing circles, and women teach Sunday school. And I'd like to hear from you. Just pop it out really quickly. What do women do?
Take baby meals.
Take baby meals. Get together and pray.
Have Bible studies.
Build a church library. Build a church library and take care of it then, yes.
Invest in people and relationships.
Invest in people and relationships.
Reach out to the hurting and the communities. Encourage. Clean the church. Organize ladies' events. Bulletin committee? Is that what she said? Okay. Yes. Read books to the children after church. Yes. Do foster care. Praying for the pastor. Yes. Babysitting for younger mothers. Yes, teaching, making beautiful and welcoming spaces.
Volunteering at school.
Visiting widows and having your children sing to them. And there was somebody else. Make space for emotion. We probably could keep on. I have organizing carry-ins, writing for church papers, helping the poor, hostess meals on Sunday, welcoming people to the service, encouraging and mentoring the weak sister, caring for children and adults with special needs, visiting neighbors, wise words in tense situations, and counseling and exhorting. And that, guys, if we spent all afternoon here, we would have pages and pages of what women contribute to the church. But I think it's helpful for us to realize what we actually do. I would just say, as important as you and your unique gifts are to the church, your giftings are never enough for the church to thrive. It takes all of us to make the body healthy and functional. And I think that's one trap that sometimes we can fall into, of feeling like that we need to do it all, and we don't. But we need to do along with our other sisters. Okay, so in your box underneath, I'd like you to write one way you'd like to contribute to the body this year that flows out of your specific giftings. And maybe you don't know what those giftings are. That's okay. Write something that you would like to do. It probably comes from your giftings. So go ahead and write that. Okay, once you have it written down, unless it's really personal, turn to somebody once again and just tell them one thing that you would like to do this coming year. If I put you in an awkward spot, I should have told you that before. You can change it if you want. Are you guys comfortable doing that or not? You are? If you're uncomfortable, you don't have to participate. Go ahead and turn and tell somebody what you'd like to do this coming year. Thank you. Thirdly, we influence with our character. And I think this is in your notes, but it's more essential to be than to do. And I want to talk about my mom just a bit. My mom was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, which is a nerve disease. There's a lining in your brain that deteriorates, and often it leads to a lack of mobility, that type of thing. And so she was diagnosed with MS about 18 years ago. And following that diagnosis, there was fairly rapid decline and loss of mobility. My mom had been a very hardworking woman. She loved beauty. She was very gifted with sewing and creative things, flowers. She had helped my dad on his, he had been a contractor for a long time. She had helped him painting houses, that type of thing. And then when I was about 12, they bought a farm. And so she was very involved in the things on the farm after that. And so all of a sudden, all the things she could do pretty much were stripped away from her. And I went from a mom that delighted in buying and sewing things for grandchildren to a mom whose wobbly signature on a birthday card spoke of the concentration it took to do that. What does it do to a person's identity to no longer be able to do? And while I loved and benefited from my mom's doing, my mom was still my mom without that. And the faithfulness and acceptance she showed through the disease meant much more than a blanket sewn for my baby. At the end of the day, character means more than actions. Faithfulness and growth are contagious. How many of us would long to be like Elizabeth Elliot or Amy Carmichael or a godly grandparent that we have? Faithfulness is a beautiful thing, even in imperfect people. Let me start over. Faithfulness is a beautiful thing, even in imperfect people. It makes us want to imitate it. Doesn't you? Those stories of women that were faithful inspire us to be faithful ourselves. And I just want to throw in here, all this stuff I'm talking about, like using our words and our actions, have to flow out of our relationship with Jesus. They're not things we conjure by ourselves. And so a question that goes along with that, are we deepening and growing in our relationship with Jesus? Are we abiding in his word? How tragic to get to the end of our life and be an older person and we're still just swayed about with every trend and wind that comes along. It's beautiful to see older women that are stable and have grown deep roots and are settled. And last but not least in the faithfulness and growth category, are we faithful in prayer? And this is something I just feel so much lacking in my life. But I want to say God does act when we pray. A little over a year ago, our family moved from South Carolina to Miami. We've been there a little over a year. And so there's been a lot of change and transition during that time. And even the years following up to that, just a lot of unknowns and a lot of things we've prayed about. And there have been so many times God has answered in ways that are humbling and exciting to see. I'm going to tell you about one of them. My son, he was 10 at the time. He's 11 now. We tried to sell our house. We had to sell our house before we went. And it was kind of, we were planning to go, but we couldn't go before the house sold. So it was going to be confirmation of it as well when God sold the house. And you hear stories about people putting their house on the market and boom, the next day it sold. And, you know, I wanted it to happen that way. But we put the house on the market and it sat and sat. And we had people coming and seeing it, but just not a lot of interest. And my son, we had put it on the market about March or so, I think. And then my son, the fall of that year, said, well, I pray that it's going to sell at Christmas. And of course, you know, all right. Our realtor actually told us that things slow down around Christmas, that type of thing. Well, wouldn't you know it? The week of Christmas, the house wasn't moving, and we had wanted to move in January, February of that year. That was when we really had wanted to move by. House wasn't selling. And the week of Christmas, leading up to Christmas, we had two showings and two offers on the house. And we verbally accepted an offer. I think it was the last day the realtor office was open before Christmas Day. And just felt huge. And I haven't had a lot of things like that happen in my life. I'm sure you guys have lots of stories as well, but it has felt like God has answered over and over again so many prayers. Not without waiting and lots of emotions involved in it. Waiting for that many months for a house to sell was really, we just waited another close to a year, about 11 months, to buy a house. And we were living in a very tiny apartment. And I have four children, and they're ages 11 to almost 18. And so we're fairly big people, and we were in a two-bedroom, one-bath little thing. We were fine, all right? People live in smaller places all around the world, but we were getting on each other's nerves a little much, and we were desperately wanting a house. Well, it took about 11 months, and we went through up and down, and finally the Lord brought the right home to us. And Patrick and I look around at the house sometimes, and we could almost cry. It's almost exactly what we prayed for. And just so confirming to see God's answer to prayer. So I'm just leaving that with you. God does answer our prayers. And I, for one, want to pray more. Okay, very quickly, I have about 5 minutes. Actually, I'm just going to tell you this one, and maybe you can think about it and do this later. I want you in that box at some point if you can. Or maybe you can just do it real quick, one word, one character quality that you would like to grow in this next year that would benefit the church. Maybe you could just write that really quickly. I'm going to pause briefly. Now, in conclusion, the life of the church isn't often glamorous or exciting. It looks a lot like faithfulness and not being weary of doing good work. At moments, we get glimpses of the church's glory, you know, sometimes sitting in the Sunday morning service and singing together, we get that glimpse. Maybe it's during a baptismal service where we realize the significance of what's happening in these young souls. But often it's shrouded in the dailiness of Christ cleansing and maturing us in that work in our churches. We can do everything right. I just want to say you won't. We can influence through the right words, the right actions, and have the right character. And church can still be a difficult place. We don't have control over the other members of the body and their choices. But someday, it will just be me and God. And I want to be able to stand before him and say, because of Christ's work in me, I love the church. I use the influence I had and the giftings you gave me for the good of the body.
Thank you for listening. All recordings from Reach 2022 are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. To purchase additional recordings from Reach or other Faith Builders events, visit us online at www.christianlearning.org or call us at 814-789-4769.